This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Entick. In 2014, Teng Yu He was part of a team that proved dinosaurs walk the land of prehistoric Malaysia. Since then, she has been researching fossil freshwater sharks. These are dinosaur-eating fishes that were in Malaysian rivers about 100 million years ago. And it's what Yu He will be telling me more about. Yu He, thank you for coming on the show today.
Hi, good afternoon.
So before we get into your research, could you maybe remind us of that discovery your team made almost 3 years ago now?
In about 2012, we discovered two types of dinosaur from the center of Pahang. Basically, we discovered dinosaur teeth from the locality. So for the first type, we found a spinosaurid dinosaur, which is a fish-eater dinosaur. And the second type, we call it the Ornithischian dinosaur, which is a plant-eater dinosaur. Yeah.
And so it was in 2012. What has been the implications of that discovery? What did that mean, that those dinosaurs existed in Malaysia at the time?
I think the most important things about this discovery is that this is the first ever dinosaur we found here. And it's actually very exciting for us, for the scientists, because we never found any dinosaur before. Whereas in Thailand, they already found a lot of dinosaur remains since 40 years ago. And they have a big museum established, but we are like 40 years behind. So it's a very good thing for us to start developing this paleontology here. And secondly, the dinosaur remains also tell us a lot about the paleo environment and the paleo ecosystem back then during the Cretaceous. So it provides a lot of information for us in terms of geology and also paleontology.
Those are two words that maybe I need you to explain a little bit more about. What's the difference between a geologist and a paleontologist, and what should I call you?
Okay. Geology basically means earth science. So that means that we study the history of Earth through studying rocks and also through studying fossils. And paleontologist means people who study fossils to indicate life history. And also, there's a lot of integration between the geology and paleontology. Yeah.
So you said we are about 40 years behind Thailand, right? Was it then already assumed among paleontologists that there has to be dinosaurs in Malaysia, just that we haven't found them yet?
Yeah, actually. Because from what I know, my lecturer in the university back then, they actually trying hard to find dinosaur remains in Peninsular Malaysia, but they couldn't find any. So we have that assumption and we have that belief, but it's just that we haven't found it. Yeah, maybe part of the reason is that the environment in Peninsular Malaysia is mostly covered by forest and jungle, so we hardly get a lot of rocks exposure.
Right.
Yeah.
And rocks exposure is needed to search for fossils?
Yeah, actually, because as you know, fossil is embedded in the rocks. Yep. So we need to have the exposure of the rocks so that we can go and find out whether there's something inside the rocks. And the problem with the heavy vegetation in Peninsular Malaysia is that those trees and the plants, they turn the rocks into soil, you know. So once the rocks has been vetted and turned into soil, we can't really find anything.
Right.
Yeah.
So a lot of lost history then, because we couldn't find them, or they just disappear because of the nature of our climate.
Yes. For example, if in a desert area, actually they are relatively easier to find fossils compared to us. Yeah, because most of the land are exposed.
So you said it was found around Pahang, which is the central area of Peninsular Malaysia. What about Southeast Asia? Is it only Thailand, or do we have we also found fossils in this region?
We also found in Laos, actually, Cambodia, some in Vietnam, some in Myanmar. But those areas also are not very well studied. The best studied area is in Thailand so far.
Is there a reason for that?
I think maybe because of the political conditions or their size community, it's not that well developed yet, I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so where are the fossils now, that you, the teeth and what you found in 2012?
It's all in the University of Malaya. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it open to the public to visit and have a look?
So far, it's not yet, because we are still doing research on it. Mm-hmm. So we hope to publish it first to the scientific journal, yeah, before we can let the public have the access to it. Yeah.
So how old is that fossil?
It's, we call it the Cretaceous age, which is about 100 million years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did Malaysia look like at the time?
Okay. During the Cretaceous time, the Malaysia is already a terrestrial environment. Terrestrial means that the land environment where there are a lot of big lakes and also big river system. Yeah.
Okay. So not too different from what we have today?
Yes, actually. Because to talk about the formation of that kind of environment, we actually had to look at the history of the formation of Peninsula Malaysia. So basically, the Peninsula Malaysia was formed in about mid to late Triassic, where two...
I think you have to translate that for me. What does that mean?
So it's about 200 million years ago. Yeah, Peninsula Malaysia was formed by the collision of two blocks, two microcontinents, basically. So you imagine that there's a line running from the south to north along the Titiwangsa Range. So the eastern side is called the Indochina block, and the western side we call the Shanghai block. So these two blocks were originally separated. Yeah. So during about 200 million years ago, they collided and formed Peninsula Malaysia. So before that 200, around 200 million years ago, there was no land here. I mean, the land was separated. And in the middle, there's an ocean. So we have a lot of evidence of deep marine and shallow marine deposit during that time. Mm-hmm. So, and it collided. Then only the terrestrial environment start to establish until now.
Right, okay. Wow, 200 million years ago. And this the dinosaur came about halfway through that 100 million years after the formation of Peninsula Malaysia.
Yeah.
And so since then, it hasn't changed much, that torrential layout that you mentioned?
Yeah, it actually hasn't changed much. But we have a recent study shows that the position of Peninsula Malaysia has changed since then.
The position of it?
Yes, position. So we have some paleomagnetic study to measure the paleolatitude of Peninsula Malaysia during the Cretaceous era. It shows that it is actually have drifted south. Mm-hmm. So it's relatively north to our current position during Cretaceous.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's nearer to Thailand and nearer to South China than today.
And so has our rock stretch? Is that because it's contiguous, right? Our land, there are no seas in between.
Yeah, it's actually not stretched, but we have something called the movement of plate tectonic. Yeah. So, and also we have new basin opening up. Mm-hmm. In between Thailand and Malaysia, like the Gulf of Thailand. Right. And also we have Malay Basin opening up during the tertiary time. So that actually moved the plate. Yeah.
So do we have any theories how dinosaurs arrived here?
theory about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, how because it was not known that dinosaurs were here, right? Or maybe, like you mentioned, people in the paleontology community assumed there were, but they couldn't find evidence for it. But now that there is concrete evidence that they were here, is there any migration theory on where they came from and where were they native to?
So far, our research has not until that extent yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we believe that in Southeast Asia, the dinosaur groups and also fish and other animals are quite, are very special in Southeast Asia. Because in Malaysia, the fossil we found, and also together with the Thailand fossils, actually we yield a lot of new type of animals, like new type of species that we couldn't find elsewhere.
Right.
So this Southeast Asia, this region has been a very special region.
What are some of the animals that walk alongside dinosaurs then?
We also found turtle and crocodile.
That are extinct today or?
They are extinct already. They are extinct already.
Isn't crocodile like one of the most resilient animals other than cockroaches?
Yeah, but the species has changed.
All right. Yeah. Okay. And because during the end of the Cretaceous period, there was the mass extinction, right? Is that why most of animals from that period has been extinct?
Yes.
Okay. So you said the fish, the shark or the dinosaur animal that you found with the teeth, they are dinosaur-eating fishes?
Actually, they are the food for dinosaur.
They are food for dinosaurs, yes. Right? So they are at the bottom of the food chain. They are not the predator.
Yeah, they're not the predator. Right. Because first we found a spinosaurid dinosaur, which is a fish-eater dinosaur.
Right.
So probably those fish are the food for the spinosaurid. And some fish might be eating each other, I mean different species.
Right.
And some fish, because what we get is the teeth. So we can, it indicates the diet from the teeth, right? So some teeth are crushing teeth. So we can assume that they are eating some hard shell mollusk in the river. Yeah.
So isn't it a great coincidence that you found both the fish-eating dinosaur and the fish that was being eaten by the dinosaurs? But no, the dinosaur was plant-eating, you said, that you found.
Oh, there are two.
The two?
Yeah. So one is a spinosaurid, it's a fish-eater.
Right.
And another one is a plant-eater.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say it's a coincidence because they are basically living in the same ecosystem, right?
Right.
So most of the time we find the predator and beside we find the prey.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, tell us more about this research then. What are you looking into, this fish?
Okay, so what I did is first I do the identification because we want to know what kind of fish is that. And we want to know what age the fish is. And identification is the first thing. Second thing, what we can get from the information from the assemblage is that we can see the linkage between our fauna and and the faunas from nearby region. For example, Thailand, which is the nearest to us and the better studied fauna. So what we found is that there is a very strong paleogeographical linkage between these two faunas. Then from there, we can indicate that what kind of a relationship of Peninsula Malaysia with Thailand back then. Yes.
And have you found an answer?
Yes, we do have a very strong linkage between Malaysian fauna and the Thailand fauna. So that means that these regions has been under the same paleogeographical region back then, which means the distribution of the animals are similar and probably the climate is similar. Yeah, the conditions, the environments are probably very similar to each other.
Are any of the fishes today in the Malaysian rivers related to this fish that you're studying?
Not that I'm aware of.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And how different were, I don't know, the anatomy or the makeup of this fish compared to the fishes we have now in modern day Malaysia compared to prehistoric Malaysia?
First, what I found is the shark.
How big they are, yeah.
The size is not sure yet, right, actually. Yeah. Because we only found a small teeth.
Right.
Yeah. Then, first, they are all extinct animal.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is a shark, freshwater shark. And now, freshwater shark is relatively rare here. So, and also the teeth, morphology, surface ornamentation are all very different. Yeah, that's all I can tell. Because we are basically based on teeth only. We don't have a whole skeleton to compare.
And why are freshwater sharks rare today?
It has to be something to do with the evolution. Yeah, which I haven't really understand much about that.
Right, okay, part. Okay. So if humans were alive then, will we be more, what would be the most dangerous to us, the animals or the weather?
First, the animal supposed to be very dangerous to us because they are super huge,
right.
Because the dinosaur is super huge. And the climate is about 5 degrees higher than today's climate.
Much hotter.
And also, we don't have much food to eat if we don't hunt, because we don't have fruits back then. Flower has just started exist during the late early Cretaceous, and it's a very primitive flower. We don't have fruits yet,
right.
So we probably can't survive during that period of time.
We have to hunt dinosaurs to survive,
which is quite impossible. They are so big.
Yeah. And but you can't determine the size of the dinosaur through the size of their teeth?
We need to have a complete set. Not to say complete. We need to have more specimen in order to do that. There's some kind of mathematics and statistic to do that. Yes, it is. We can do that. We can actually estimate that. But for now, because our specimen, we have just a few, probably we can't have a very accurate indication yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was listening to the interview you did with us 3 years ago, and you said there were only 2 to 3 paleontologists at the time back then. But since this discovery, have you seen a surge in interest in this field? Are more people interested in geology and paleontology?
Actually, they are. Most of them are teenagers or kids. They come to me and ask, like, how can I become a paleontologist? So I found that actually people are interested, just that they don't know what is the way, like how they can become a paleontologist.
Right.
Yeah.
How does one become a paleontologist?
Basically,
interested in science?
In terms of your course choosing during your university time, you can either choose geology or biology, because paleontology is the integration of both disciplines. So after you finish the undergrads in geology or biology, then in the postgrad only we do paleontology. Yeah, so we don't really have, in Malaysia, we don't really have a paleontology course in the undergrad program.
Right. Okay. And is it exciting to be in this field? Are there, and do you anticipate a lot of many other undiscovered creatures to be discovered?
Yes, it's certainly very exciting, especially when you found some new things.
Right.
And because we always go to the field and look for fossils, and then sometimes we don't really find it on the field, but we bring back a lot of rocks once there is an indication that there might be a fossil. So we bring back the rocks. And then in the labs, when we prepare, we try to clean up the rocks and we found something. So all this process is very exciting for me. Yeah.
What would be that? Because I'm sure you have to identify an area before you go to the field, right? Because you don't want to be just going on a wild goose chase and poking around unnecessarily in places where the chances of finding a fossil will be low. What would be the condition that...
The way that...
You would determine there's a high probability here is the area we should dig and search and, you know.
Okay, so basically what we did is, first we need to know about the geology of that area. That's where the geology comes in. So we need to refer to the geological map to see what kind of rocks are there. For example, if you want to hunt for dinosaur, we know that dinosaur exists during Jurassic and Cretaceous period of time. So we need to know where are those rocks located. Because we date, the geologists date the rocks and they put it in the map already for us. So, okay, let's say I know that there are Jurassic Cretaceous rocks in Pahang. So I go to that area, I check the old literature, and so I search for the rocks. So the age of the rocks have to be correct. And secondly, we check the geological setting, which means the depositional environment of the rocks. So dinosaur is a land animals. We can't find it in a marine deposit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we checked the settings. Okay, this is a fluvial system, a fluvial deposit. So there's a chance that there might be some remains there. And then we also have to see if this fluvial, is it high energy or low energy? If it is a very high energy environment, we probably can't find a complete fossil, or maybe we can't find anything at all because it's not preserved there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from there, we start to search.
Okay. I think my last question would be, how accurate is the science in a movie like Jurassic Park? Do you get frustrated if it's inaccurate? Or if it's accurate, then do you like ask everyone to watch it so they become paleontologists in the future?
Yeah, actually, those movies, I think, are the reason people start to get interested, right? But of course, there are a lot of inaccuracy. For example, recently we found that the T-Rex actually has fur.
Really?
Yeah, and there are also scientists suggest that most dinosaur actually has fur.
Okay.
Yeah. So then the movie has to, yeah, it's not accurate right. In that sense. But we know that size is improving over the time. So we believe that that's what they can make the best for the time being.
And we don't know their color as well, right?
Yeah, we don't. We don't really know the color.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because they are very scary looking. Tengyuhe, thank you very much for speaking to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.